Today is Tuesday, the 3rd of March, 1995, and this is Jonathan Kingston interviewing Barney Old Coyote on Crazy Dogs That Want to Die and on Steve Faraway's life.
Well, my name is Barney Old Coyote, and in Crow language they called me Cheap Kurdish Tajia. And I hope the principle comes true, because they say if you say your own name, you'll marry an old woman. So any old woman will do. And Cheap Kurdish Tajia means white calf. And nowadays they say young white buffalo calf, which is redundant. But Cheap Kurdish Tajia means a young male. And Chia means white, so it's white calf. Mm. And my age is 71, and 5'6". So I'll be, 11 months now. I'll be 72 in one more month. Mm. Is that enough?
That's good.
And did you want me to do the questions? Is that the idea here?
Yeah.
All right.
If you could just go down the questions, and I'll just acknowledge you, and you talk.
All right. What makes the Crazy Dog War Society different from other Crow War Societies? It was different because, as a society, it was self-proclamation. It was an independent decision. And when you made the decision, you were not regarded a crazy dog until you announced it publicly and demonstrated publicly. And how you did that was you sang their songs, and you dressed in the ceremonial garb of the crazy dog, and that was literally your the clothes that you vowed to die in, if necessary. You didn't necessarily have to die, but you vowed that you would face the enemy and enter their midst in a very hostile situation. So that's what makes it different, because all the other warriors were not honor or duty bound to even die at the hands of the enemy. They all risked death, but this particular society said, I'll walk right into it and not try to dodge their bullets or their weapons. Number two, was the Crazy Dog Society an exclusive society? In that only those who took the vow and went through the ritual and vowed to die at the hands if necessary made it exclusive. Other than that, anyone could join. It was not closed to anyone. You didn't have to have particular qualifications. You just, as far as I know, let me say this after question number two. Mm-hmm. What I'm telling you in answer to this questionnaire is my impressions and my understanding and my observance and inquiry with regard to the Crow Tribes were Crazy Dog Society. Mm. I'm not pretending to speak for any other tribe or any other impression. There may be different opinions and different perspectives on the Crazy Dog Society. I'm telling you my version, my understanding, and only as it regards the Crow. The stereotype is the most dangerous thing attended to Indian situation. It's so easy to take one situation and stereotype all the other Indians with it. Mm-hmm. And I'm not trying to stereotype neither the Crow tribe or other tribes. Mm-hmm. And when I say these things, this is my understanding. Where did I get my information? I grew up with it. Mm-hmm. My brother was a crazy dog, my late brother Henry. I heard accounts of it and where it come from. And I have a collection of about 80 hours of tape that talks about Crow principle, Crow war societies, Crow history, all that. And we even printed one in the first draft of a paper we're calling the Crow Stories, the story of Rabbit Child. That story is on tape and can be heard, it's printed, you can read it. And in the printed form, in English, that has been reviewed by two authorities who are both professional and very, very Crow-oriented. One is Joseph Medicine Crow. He has a master's degree in anthropology from USC. He speaks the Crow language fluently. He knows the story. And then the other is Dale O'Horn. Mm. He has a master's degree in linguistics from MIT, and he's very fluent and very conversant with the Crow situation and stories. And both of them reviewed that story as we interpreted it, my brother and I. Mm. My brother himself being a crazy dog. Mm. So that's in print, and I'm not afraid to refer that story to anybody, because it tells a Crow story, an individual story, mm-hmm. and that does not characterize all crazy dog mm-hmm. society. So let me continue. How would a Crow become part of the crazy dog society? It's an individual thing. Mm-hmm. You take the vow, you follow the ritual, and you demonstrate your intent. You are a member of the society, and you remain a member for the rest of your life mm-hmm. until the moment came. Under what circumstances would the crazy dog be released from his vow? It was a self-determined thing, but if you went into the midst of the enemy in a hostile situation and you survived, you didn't have to go back. You had fulfilled your vow. And that's, as far as I know, that's the only way that you were ever released from the vow. You could abort, but that's the next question. What would happen if a crazy dog refused to fulfill his vow? There are many ways of regarding this, and please don't take this as the only way or the ultimate in this, but he would forever lose face. I guess that's a term that the white people use. He would be dishonored. He would no longer be held in high esteem. He would lose the respect of people. Maybe some friends would continue to support him, but generally speaking, loss of respect, loss of honor, and one of the terms they use is they suffered menstruation like a woman, meaning that you aborted imahut. Imahut means that you lost your manhood. That was a term that they used. So you no longer regard in a high position that you had. Number seven, what would members of the Crazy Dog Society receive in return for taking their vow? Then the second part is any special privileges or liberties. I think in that crazy dog story of Rabbit Child, there's some mention of the indulgence that was heaped upon those two. And that's what they regard. And their songs say that. If you listen to those stories, the songs tell as much of the story as do the narrative. And the songs, they took whatever liberties that the tribe had to offer, whatever privileges, and they did it without any constraint or any inhibition. They were extended all the privileges. For example, as they say in that story, it's repeated over and over again, through songs and acts and stories, is that they would even take privileges with married women. Mm-hmm. They would tell the husband, you're going to be in bed with this woman for a long time. Mm-hmm. Let me have my turn now. I'm taking my turn now, which meant that he was not going to live long anyway. Mm-hmm. And in their songs, they say, you over there, I'm staying up and waiting for you. It's you that I'm waiting for, or it's your wife I'm waiting for. So all this is articulated into the privileges that these crazy dogs were enjoying or not, but they were heaped on those. Those were the special privileges. I don't know whether other things that you're talking about, as far as liberties, this was a free society within the constraints of whatever rules. With them, they were willing to bend the rules and let them do things in a way that they enjoyed the full indulgence of the tribe. Then the next one says, how would crazy dogs be used in war? In war, if war is extended, they just held their place. and they just continued to live like crazy dogs. Be nice to people, have nice, have people be nice to you. Mm-hmm. And but if there was a battle, and there was their place. They didn't say, I'm going to go out and be killed by the enemy. What they said was, I'm willing to give my life. Give me my moment. And that moment usually came this way. If there was a standoff, the enemy could not be subdued. But the enemy could not escape but desperately trying to survive. That's when the crazy dog generally would be used. They asked for that moment. They'd say, I want to have my moment. Don't let it be too long. I don't want to be indulged in forever. Give me my moment so I can fulfill my vow or be killed. Mm-hmm. And that meant that if there was a fortification, the crows call that Minnachtje. Minnachtje literally means a fence. So a besieged enemy would throw up breastworks, throw up fortifications, and that was called Minnachtje. And even in his songs, he said, I'm looking for one of those. I'm looking for a fortification. And I'm going to enter it. And that was part of their vow. And they would sing it. And they'd serenade with that. And that's how they were used. And when they went into that place, the primary purpose then was not only to go in and humiliate the enemy, and just walk right into their gunfire, or into their weapons, but to draw the fire. And once they drew the fire, then the rest of the war party go ahead and follow and take advantage of that momentary respite from the enemy's weapons. Why did crazy dogs talk backwards? They did not always talk backwards. Sometimes they stated things as they were. However, they practiced the principle of doing things backwards. For example, he would be riding through camp serenading, and somebody would say, well, don't stop and get off your horse here, and don't come in and sit down and eat. Well, right, I'll do that. So he would get off his horse, come in and sit down and eat. On the other hand, if they'd say, don't go, don't do that, they would do it. And this literally... All right, we're on question number 9. Why did crazy dogs talk backwards? And I covered the area of they're not always doing things backwards because they talk directly and normally like everyone else some of the time. But they also prepared for the time when that the moment was near and there was imminent death ahead. And loved ones, close friends, relatives, would say, don't go. They talk backwards on occasion so that when you told them, don't go, it meant for them to go. On the other hand, if you said, go, thinking that by talking backwards he wouldn't go, you were also telling him to go. So they were leaving themselves the option of never turning back. And this is why they talked backwards. And it's not true that they rode backwards into battle. They went in there to do damage. They went in there just like any other warrior, except that they went into the midst of the enemy. That was their vow. And if it was a fortification, they would enter the fortification. And it was almost an unknown deed, except for very individual and unique people who have done that, to go right into the enemy's fortification. And they vowed to do that. So the reason they talked backwards on occasion was that their option. They could talk backwards or straight. That way they would go ahead and fulfill their vow no matter what was said. I think, is that enough on that one?
Yeah, that's
all right. Give an example of how crazy dogs would talk backwards. I think I told you that already. And then how would a crazy dog dress? Normally they dressed just like anyone else, in common, ordinary, everyday garb. Except ceremonially, they wore red. It didn't have to be any particular style. That traditionally, they would wear red for the top part of the torso, for their leggings, and they were almost absurd in the amount of red they wore. And sometimes it is said that this was to show that they were not afraid of blood from their own body. On the other hand, they say, sometimes they say, well, when they were wounded and drew blood, the observers could not detect it right away, see how mortally they were wounded. Well, whatever the case may be, they didn't wear any disguise. They wanted to stand out, and you could see them for a mile off because they wore a lot of red. And another tradition that they usually practiced was what they called a trail, the trail sash. And sometimes they wore it both directions. They would wrap it around their waist. It would have a preponderance of red. And it was just like the tassel on a belt that would extend for sometimes 20, 30 feet trailing behind them. And it's said that as they were singing and going through or dancing, someone who wanted to support them could pick up that that sash to publicly show their support for them. Sometimes girlfriends, would-be girlfriends, would pick that up, signifying that they were committing themselves to this crazy dog. And the color they were was only when they were serenading the camp or doing their dance, which was very unique. And then when they went to meet their end or complete their vow, they would wear that red for the reasons that I described. The symbolic colors they would wear, that depended. But usually trade cloth, the navy blue, the dark blue, and the red was all part of their dress. And they would dress like they were getting ready for a big event, dress their best, look their best, paint themselves, comb their hair, wear decorations and ornaments or whatever, and be as attractive as they could come. If they rode a horse, they would decorate the horse. It's not these hand-painted things that you see and so on. What they meant by decorating a horse was maybe tie some fetishes on the horse, wear resplendent or very luxurious trappings. As if this is what they were going to carry to their grave, so they dressed in their best. Why did crazy dogs like to dance so much? It's not so much that they liked to dance, but they kept reaffirming their vow. They kept reaffirming their commitment. And every once in a while, they'd want to remind the people that they're not here for long. I want to get enough of you. I try to give me enough of you as I can. Give me this good life. I want to enjoy my last moments, kind of thing. And I think it's there's distortion to say that they like to dance. They didn't always dance. Many times they just serenaded. And when they decided to punctuate their commitment and their resolve, they would dance. And it's not often you see a crazy dog dance, so people would flock to watch them. And in the rabbit child story, the storyteller says he was very outgoing, very sociable, very nice. He wanted to be mourned by a lot of people, and it happened. So what he wanted to do was endear yourself to the tribe and let them know that this is just not a frivolous thing that you were doing. You were dead serious about it, so that when you were gone, they really lost somebody. And when you went, you wanted to go under conditions that were honorable and to the benefit of the tribe. They were not frivolous about it. So they demonstrated that over and over again. You ask, why do they like to dance so much? Can you imagine anyone wounding himself while you're dancing? But Rabbit Child did, because he wanted to demonstrate to the people. And if you read that story, while they were at Mission, what is now Mission Creek on the Yellowstone Valley, he danced a couple of times. He would serenade the camp, and when they would go through the camp, somebody would say, why don't you get off and dance? Who danced? Oh, okay, we'll do it. And he didn't ask to dance. He was asked, he was told and asked and requested to dance. So he did. Mm-hmm. And when he danced, he didn't say, well, because you asked me, I'll just do it lackadaisically and only this much. He did it to the extreme. Mm-hmm. Again, demonstrating his resolve that this was a total commitment. Anything he did was total. Mm-hmm. If he was kind to you, he was totally kind. Mm-hmm. And if he danced, he danced. Danced as hard as he could. Mm. And when he sang, when he rode a horse, he rode the best horse, all those things. Mm. Anyway, in that crazy dog story of Rabbit Child, you might recall that while he was dancing, he just said to no one in particular, but they could hear him, say, in case I get weak of heart, I'll just try this. And he took that short-snubbed rifle of his that he carried to his death, cocked it, and shot himself right in the broad part of his feet, right behind the toes, between the ankle and the toes. And the blood was bubbling out of that wound, and he just continued to dance to demonstrate that he was not going to deter himself from that commitment. He said, in case I get weak of heart, I'll try this. Boom, shot himself in the foot. Would you call that liking to dance? No. Yeah. It was a demonstration of something else rather than the way the question is couched.
Yeah.
And that's what makes me afraid of stereotypes here. They like to dance so much that they shoot themselves and keep dancing. You know, it's not that at all. Would the crazy dog carry any particular instrument while he danced? And I think what you're doing is groping for the rattle thing. Mm. They carry rattles. And if you listen to the Rabbit Child story, you'll quickly learn that his ceremonial rattle, which goes all the way back for as long as there have been crazy dogs, were made out of hide, out of intestines, out of stomach lining, whatever. But if it was a raw hide, it was usually the smaller ones. And he had one of those. It had a ikibiririja, which meant it had a feather top to it. And he had a sash, a cord to it, and he carried that around his wrist. Mm. But he also, in the written form, it said that he also had a milk can that he stripped of the label and everything and made it into a long rattle. Mm. And he polished it so it was nice and shiny. And he used that for his singing and his dancing, because he would accompany his singing with the rhythm of that rattle. And when he danced, they would ask for a drummer to come and sing with him, or drum for him. But he carried those rattles mainly to retain the rhythm and to use it as accompaniment to his singing. And when he sang slow, he would shake the rattle in time with his singing. And when he danced, he would shake it to the tune of the jumpy, hoppity song. Mm. And the way the story is told, he had his ceremonial thing, which was painted with ochre and all that, and he had a band and he put it around his wrist. But he also took a baking powder can and polished it. Now, if you say baking powder can nowadays, they're out of cardboard or plastic or something, and you can't imagine anybody making a rattle that carries a lot of sound to it, or shiny, because plastic doesn't shine. Mm. But those old tin cans that they used to put baking powder in, if you've ever seen in a museum or something, Price's baking powder, it's got a yellow label on it. Mm. You peel the label off, and it's got like a snoof can. It has a lid to it, and it's all tin. Mm. And real shiny. You polish it up and it just glows. Mm. And if you go to the hand game tournaments of the Crow, you'll see the cheering sections carry rattles. And they're made out of milk cans. That's why we substituted milk can for baking powder can in the story, in the written form, because nobody today can imagine a baking powder can being a shiny kind of a noisy thing. Mm. What kind of songs would the crazy dog sing? Well, I don't know what you mean by that. they're crow songs.
Yeah.
The melodies are just that.
Mm-hmm.
And they would have words. They would change words to reflect their own situation
mm-hmm.
and to predict their death.
Mm-hmm.
They'd express things like, there's nothing that's going to make me live any longer.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to live very long. I'm not going to last forever. My day is coming. I had a rendezvous with you last summer, and I've been lonely ever since,
mm-hmm.
which expresses maybe a lover saying that.
Mm-hmm.
You're gone now.
Mm-hmm.
I had you last summer, and I'm lonely.
Mm-hmm.
The songs that they would sing were of several kinds. Let me refer to Rabbit Child.
Mm-hmm.
When he first announced his becoming a crazy dog, they could hear him giving those yells. White people call it war call and war whoop and all that. It was a means of communication. They were like idioms.
Mm.
You gave different calls.
Mm.
Pay attention.
Mm.
I'm coming. Something important is coming. Or I'm going into my final effort. This is total effort. Or I'm going from one camp to another. There were different yells.
Mm.
And they were high pitched and at the top of your voice. But they could hear him saying, something important is about to happen.
Mm.
And they remarked, that must be Rabbit Child. Maybe he's becoming one.
Mm.
So the rumors were there that he might become one. And they said, it's probably him. Then he starts singing. And he says, you young women, I am coming now. I am here now. That announced that I'm ready for this role.
Mm.
And it was a serenade song. No particular, no war song, no war party song, like you see in the movies or you see characterized and stereotypical of the Indian people. Oh, I don't know what you mean by what kind of songs,
mm-hmm.
but there were songs that were unique for them, and he would sing them. And then when they were riding off to their final rendezvous with death, as it were, they sang
mm.
those kinds of songs. They were a little bit faster, but they were galloping.
Mm.
So if you can visualize in your mind a galloping horse and singing a melody almost in tune with a galloping horse, and they were not galloping fast, but they serenaded the camp to announce that they were on their way now.
Huh.
And then as they disappeared, the songs rang in your ear.
Mm.
And they didn't sing for themselves when they danced. They would call in a drummer. And if you remember the Rabbit Child story, the one they called the man with a shirt, I think, or a man with a mother, was one of the outstanding singers. And he said, this is different.
Mm.
If it happens while I'm there, I'll sing for him. And I won't run from his side. I will join him.
Mm.
Then is the songs that they sing are haunting things. They're serenades, things like I know I'm gonna go,
mm.
and it's on my mind, and I want to go real bad
mm.
because of it. I don't get much sleep. Songs like that to remind the people and remind themselves that they're not long for this world. We'll go to number 15, the crow word for the crazy dog war society. War is not, everything is so Anglo-oriented, you know, everything at war party, war dance, war song. They were getting ready for battle. And it was a society because of the war situation. But it didn't make any difference which tribe that happened to be the last occasion for them. But it was the enemy of the crow.
Mm.
The that they vowed to do that. And they call it Bishkiwarache, which means crazy dog. Mm. And a crazy dog that you see is not the kind of thing where they totally lose their mind. But mm-hmm. what they're talking about is a dog that knows good from bad, but chooses to be careless, and to be reckless. Mm. That's what it refers to. Bishke Arache. Bishke means dog, and Arache means crazy. And then on Steve Farley, I think I told you some detail. I just did it by hearsay. Mm-hmm. I heard that Steve Farley became a crazy dog because John Cummins was regarded as his brother-in-law, and when John Cummins entered the camp as a crazy dog, and this was with regard to giveaway, mm-hmm. not the old practice of going into the enemy and losing your life if you had to, but in recent years, since there was no more enemy warfare, a crow crazy dog took that vow with regard to giving away. And just as the original crazy dogs were reckless about their life to the extent of benefiting the tribe, they gave away with no inhibitions, with total regard for keeping anything for themselves. They gave it their all, and they did the giveaway. And that's how I understand that crazy dog society to be since the end of intertribal warfare. And my understanding is that Steve Farley became one because he saw his brother-in-law, John Cummings, vowing to be one, and he danced with him, and therefore became a crazy dog. Mm. And you ask about Steve Farley receiving any of the special privileges afforded to crazy dogs. The situations have changed, so I think you'd get that better from Steve Farley himself, because his life is private, just like the others were. Mm. They made public pronouncements, but they spent time in this camp enjoying the privileges and courtesies, they didn't go announce it. That was his life. And if they had a relationship with anyone in the tribe, that was their private relationship. It's not like the pulp magazines we read about today where you dig into every little detail. It was not that way at all. Not that I know. And then question number three on Steve Farley, you ask, is Steve Farley officially the last living crow dog? I don't know what you mean by officially. You know, who stamps them? Mm. It's themselves. Mm. And they publicly announce it. And as far as I know, he's the last one ever to announce and to participate as a full-fledged crazy dog in the giveaway practice. Mm. And I don't know, you might go to the tribal office and ask them to put an official stamp on it, but that's their information. Mm-hmm. So, again, we are distorting the issue. You wanted me to tell you about what I knew mm-hmm. about crazy dogs, and now I'm being asked if Steve is officially. I don't have any official stamp to put on it. I have no authority, no right. I told you this is my own impression. And as far as I know, he's the last living crazy dog. How do I know? I heard him say it. Mm. I heard him say when my brother was living, Henry Okai, that he and I are the two last living ones. I heard it from Steve himself. Mm. I heard it from my brother. Steve and I are the last ones of the crazy dogs. They didn't say living. They just said the last ones. So I took that to mean that there were the last two that were still alive, that he knew about. Mm. And to me, that completes the questions. Yeah. And you might ask Steve if he has some official designation that I don't know about, because I never knew of someone being labeled officially a crow dog. Never did. Mm-hmm. They proclaimed it themselves, and they lived it themselves. And the people accepted them for that. And as far as a stamp of official or not official, I don't know about that. Mm-hmm. If there are any other things I would like to comment on this, I do feel free to comment. Mm-hmm. And the only thing that I'd like to share with you is please do not take this as a stereotype for all crazy dogs. Please do not take this discussion as an official stamp to rebuke or to chastise anyone who might say differently, because there are so many different ways of looking at something, and when you look at it through the eyes of a Western European, there's a tendency to look at it in terms of the Judean Christian approach. Here's what's wrong, here's they're backwards, and so on. And to them it wasn't backwards at all. But in the eyes of the Western Europeans, it was backwards. And everything about the Crow way is backwards. The language is backwards, like just like German. Subject, verb, object. The Crow is object, verb, subject. So when you try to translate literally, it comes out backwards. And then when we have questions like, did they go into battle backwards? I don't know where that came from, but they say they rode into battle backwards, riding backwards. You got it on video up there at Custer Battlefield. Play it, see it. It's a story about Robert Yellowtail. And I don't know of anything that could be further from the truth as far as Crows are concerned. It might be true with some other tribe. But that's about all I have to say.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Sure.